This Is Your Life, episode 13.
This is your life. Are you who you wanna be?
Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, we're going to be talking about my brand new book, Platform: Get Noticed in a Noisy World. Yesterday was a big day for me. It was the official publication date of the book, and we're celebrating this entire week with a special, amazing offer that I can't wait to tell you about. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about the book. I'm going to take some listener questions, and we had a ton of them. And then toward the end of the show, I'm going to tell you about the special offer. And if you just can't wait to learn about that, you can go to platformbook.com for the details. Platformbook.com for the details. But first, this podcast is brought to you by Dynamic Communicators International, producers of the SCORE, Launch, and Platform conferences. These unique events are designed for professional speakers and those who simply want to communicate more professionally. So you can find out more information at dynamiccommunicators.com. So, the book. Let me set it up like this. More than four centuries ago, William Shakespeare said, "All the world's a stage." And man, that's truer now than it's ever been before. If you've got something to say or to sell, whether it's a product, a service, a brand, a cause, or just yourself, you're on stage. But if you haven't noticed, that stage is really, really crowded. I mean, more than 1 million books were published just last year. In fact, I went to Amazon recently just to find out how many books they have for sale in their database. Want to guess? 27 million books for sale on Amazon right now. There's more than 164 million blogs in the world. Thousands of television and radio shows. More video was uploaded to YouTube in the last 60 days than was produced by all three major networks in their first 60 years of existence. Let me say that again. More video was uploaded to YouTube in the last 60 days than was produced by all three major networks in the first 60 years of their existence. And that doesn't even include all the noise that comes from social media with Facebook and Twitter, LinkedIn, now Google Plus, and services like Pinterest, apps, games. You know, it's incredibly noisy out there, and it's very difficult for small businesses, for others to get heard in this kind of noisy environment. And that's exactly why you need a platform, and that's exactly why I wrote this book. But what is a platform? Well, very simply, it's that thing that you stand on to be heard. Originally, it was just a small hill, wood, ultimately metal now. But remember the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus stood on a small hill in order to be heard, and preachers and salespeople and people trying to build brands or to get focus or attention for their cause have been doing a similar thing ever since. But it's no longer about being picked to be given something like a radio show or a television show or a newspaper column. Those are kind of the old days, you know, like 5 years ago. Today, these platforms are made of people, contacts, connections, customers, followers, fans. Well, let me just tell you a little bit about how I got interested in building a platform. As you may know, if you've listened to this show for any length of time or followed me on my blog, I've spent my entire career in the book publishing business. And about 10 years ago, I started noticing a very disturbing trend. We kept turning away authors with really good content. I mean, they may have had a brilliant idea or a compelling proposal or a well-written manuscript, but it was no longer enough. We were turning these people away. Why? Because they didn't have a platform. They didn't have a way of reaching their audience. In fact, most of them didn't even have a defined audience. There was no way to bridge the gap without an enormous investment on our part as a publisher. And the economics of publishing were changing, and it was becoming increasingly difficult for investing the kind of money we used to build that platform for the author. We needed something to start with, which was the author's platform. Well, about that time, a funny thing happened. This was about 8 years ago, about 2004. I started blogging and accidentally built my own platform. I didn't really set out to build a platform. I just started blogging because I wanted a place where I could disentangle my thinking where I could refine my thinking, and a place where I could store, or a place that could become a repository for my best thinking, so I could share it with my employees and my colleagues and people in my industry that were asking me the same questions over and over again. So I actually started in the spring of 2004 in April, and I want to just share with you how my blog traffic grew year by year. And I ran this chart actually on my blog a while back, and I'll put it in the show notes so that you can see the graphic representation of it. But it's pretty interesting, and I'm not telling you this to brag. I'm telling you this to encourage you, and I'll come back to this in a minute. Let me just give you the numbers. That first year, 2004, I averaged about 110 readers a month. Then in 2005, the average went up to 225 readers a month. So, you know, not bad if you're looking at the numbers. The numbers doubled in the course of that year, but still, you know, not anything to get really excited about. Year three, it went to 450 readers, so again, doubling. Year four, about 700 readers a month. Then in year five, this would have been 2008, an average of about 20,000 readers a month. So something happened. That was an enormous inflection point for me. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute and tell you why I think that happened and why I think it's significant for you if you're just beginning to build your platform. Then in 2009, about 43,000 readers a month. Year seven, which would have been 2010, 59,000 readers a month. Then it took another big jump in 2011 up to 183,000 readers a month. And then my average so far this year in 2012 has been about 261,000 readers a month. And as high as last month, I had over 300,000 unique visitors to my blog. So again, I'm not telling you this to brag, but it was a dramatic growth over the last 8 years. And I'm telling you to encourage you. So let me just give you quickly four observations about those numbers. Number one, I blogged for 4 years before I broke 1,000 readers a month. I blogged for 4 years before I broke 1,000 readers a month. So I don't know what your blog traffic is. I don't know how many people are reading you, but take heart. In the early days, it can start slow, but it doesn't really matter because in that time, you're trying to find your voice. You're trying to narrow your subject matter focus. You're trying to gain some rapport and listen to your audience and improve your writing skills or your broadcasting skills or your podcasting skills, or whatever it is that your primary platform. As I said earlier, I hit a big, big, big inflection point in 2008. Went in that 1 year, let me scroll back up here. It went in that 1 year from 700 readers a month in 2007 to an average of 20,000 readers a month in 2008. Well, why? Four reasons. One is I started blogging more consistently. I mean, I was like the typical blogger. You know, I would go in spurts and fits, and you know, I would blog some days every day, and then it might be a month before I blogged, or it might be 2 months, and so that whole time my blog's just laying there dormant, and people don't know what to expect. Well, I made a commitment in 2008 that I was going to blog at least 3 days a week, no matter what. And I think this was a huge commitment for me at the time, especially being a CEO of a major company. But I committed that I was going to do that. I was going to do it on my own time. And I typically wrote late at night. But I found my blogging voice. And that was the second reason why I believe that there was this inflection point, is I found my blogging voice. And I'm going to talk more about voice and what that means here in a little bit in answer to one of the questions that one of my listeners left. I think another reason, though, was that a few big blog sites, a few big websites linked to me, including Lifehacker. They gave me exposure to a whole new audience. In fact, they brought my server down twice because they sent me so much traffic. But a lot of that traffic stuck. I got the exposure, people discovered me, and they kept coming back. Well, that could happen to you, too. All it takes is one or two key people. You know, you may have less than 100 readers a month or less than 1,000 readers a month, but there may be one or two people in there that could actually change the game for you forever. Another thing that happened, the fourth reason that my blog traffic exploded in 2008 was I began using social media. And I think I began using it in the right way in terms of promoting my blog and my primary home base, something I talk about at length in the book. But before that, it was very difficult to get the word out. I mean, there was no way to get the word out except pure word of mouth. But with Twitter and Facebook, suddenly all of that changed. It was possible now to reach an audience of people and point them back to my blog. Here's one observation that I think you can take away from this as you look at this. Please don't let this discourage you. If anything, it should encourage you. Many people quit right before they're about to succeed. Many people quit right before they hit that inflection point. Don't be one of them. You just got to stay with it. And assuming you've got a modicum of talent, and you're bound to have a modicum of talent, assuming you're an expert in some subject area, and I can promise you, you are an expert in some subject area, there are things that you take for granted that you know that nobody else knows. Or if they know them, they're not being expressed through your personality. Your unique combination of experience and skills and gifts makes what you have to offer to the world unique. And you got to believe that. Take it by faith if you can't believe it for yourself right now. So I ended up building this platform, sort of this accidental platform. But here's another observation that I would make. I built a platform before I needed it. This is key. A lot of people develop a product, a service, they launch a business, they have a book they want to publish, and then they think, oh, okay, now I've got this, I'm ready to build a platform. You know, wrong. You got to do this long before you've got something to say or to sell, long before you're ready to launch that business, long before you're ready to launch the product or the service. It's kind of like the old adage goes, when's the best time to plant a tree? Well, the answer is 25 years ago. But when's the second best time? Well, that would be today. Same thing's true for a platform. When would be the best time to build a platform? Well, it would have been great if you'd started 5 years ago if you're thinking about launching a product today. But when's the second best time? Today. You need to get started. And the thing I try to do in the book platform is explain in meticulous detail exactly how you do that. Fourth observation that I would make about those numbers that I shared with you about my own blog traffic numbers is that I could have done it faster today if I had known then what I know now. I was really meticulous about documenting everything I learned along the way, the successes and the failures, and I failed a lot. I made a lot of dumb mistakes, but I distilled everything that I learned into this new book, and that's really what the platform book is about. And I'll talk to you a little bit in a minute about what it's about, but this is the week to buy it. Why? Because if you buy the book this week, and if you forward to me the receipt, and I explain all of this at platformbook.com, platformbook.com, I will send you 7 bonuses worth $375. Now, I'm going to give you a list of those bonuses in a minute. But the cool thing, and the thing I want you to take away from this introduction to the topic today, is that you really can build a platform. I'm telling you, the popularity of social media has changed everything. Now, for the first time in history, non-celebrities, people like you and me, can get noticed in an increasingly noisy world. And maybe you're thinking, because sometimes I get this objection, well, yeah, you were the CEO of a big company, and so that's why you got noticed. And I want to say, no. I mean, CEO or not, I couldn't attract more than 1,000 readers for the first 4 years, 1,000 readers a month. So it didn't really help me. And in fact, I could make the argument that it hurt me. Because who wants to hear from a CEO? CEOs have the reputation of being boring, of not being transparent, of just kind of, you know, giving corporate speak. I mean, honestly, how many CEOs do you read? I don't read any. And I don't read them because typically they don't have much to say, or their, you know, corporate handlers won't let them blog or won't let them do video blogs or let them do a podcast. You know, I think that's unfortunate. I think that's a huge mistake. And I don't think there's really anything to fear there. I certainly didn't have any problems in all the years that I've been doing this, even though Thomas Nelson at one time was a public company. But my only point is that people have excuses. And I don't care if it's, you know, you think, well, I'm too young, or I'm too old. You know, I'm overqualified. I'm underqualified. I'm not a CEO. I'm not a celebrity. Any excuse will do if you're not committed to making it happen. But if you are, then those excuses just need to go in your rearview mirror, and you need to make progress and start, because there are powerful examples, a lot of them I have in the book, of people who began with no platform and suddenly they had a platform. So here's my premise for the book and for this episode of the show. That is, you can assemble a powerful personal platform with just five planks. And I refer to these sometimes in the book as directives, but the book is built around these five directives or these five planks. And I'm just going to give these to you without elaboration because I want to get to the questions. We'll cover these in the questions anyway. But number one, start with wow. It all comes back to this. In a world where word of mouth is so important, you've got to have a great product, a great service, a great business, a great cause, or you're going to fail quickly. David Ogilvy, a great advertising mind of the last century, said this: great marketing only makes a bad product fail faster. Let me say it again and say it more slowly. Great marketing only makes a bad product fail faster. So in other words, if you do a great job on the marketing, but you haven't really honed your product or your service offering or your cause so that it's really compelling, then you're going to fail. I don't care how great your marketing is, because word of mouth gets out. This is why a movie can be released on a Friday night. And if it's not any good, because of social media and because everybody in the world essentially has a megaphone and is networked to everybody else, that movie can be dead by Sunday night. So you've got to start with wow. Number two, prepare to launch. And launching anything takes some preparation, mostly in terms of your mindset. And so I talk about in the book several topics, but one of which I think is probably the linchpin or the most important, is that you've got to accept responsibility for your own success or failure. It's not up to somebody else to make you famous. It's not up to somebody else to get the word out. It's your responsibility. You're the chief marketing officer. You're the best spokesperson for your cause. And that doesn't mean you can't employ or use other people in the process, even volunteers, but it means you've got to take responsibility for the outcome. Third plank, or the third directive, is to build your home base. You've got to have a spot in cyberspace that you own and control. And I recommend that that's a blog or a podcast or something where you're controlling the messaging and the branding. And I present in that chapter a social media framework that I think will help you kind of put it all together and not be, this is key, not be overwhelmed with Facebook and Twitter and wondering where you should spend your time. I give you a scheme that makes it very, very clear. The fourth plank, the fourth directive, is expand your reach. Okay, so now you've got a home base. How do you get out there and get more traffic? And this is really where I leverage what I've learned over these 8 years and hopefully save you a lot of time for expanding your reach. I give you some very practical tactics, including what's the role of giving away free stuff in building your tribe? How do you expand your reach through getting attention and adding value? And I talk about that in this particular section, along with social media and what's its role. And then in the fifth and final section of the book, the fifth plank, I talk about engaging your tribe. You know, it's not all just about reach, about getting your message out there. In this day, people don't just want a monologue, which is you just broadcasting away and, you know, essentially spamming people where your message is not relevant, it's not personal, it's considered an interruption. You know, Seth Godin talked about that in his wonderful book, Permission Marketing. I think it's about 12 years old, but that is a baseline book that you must read if you haven't read. But it's really about a conversation today. It's really about a dialogue, not a monologue, and you've got to be able to engage your tribe and give them a mechanism for talking back to you. And I outline several strategies for that in the book. So the thing I want to say in conclusion before we go to the questions is this really could be your time. You really could build a platform. What is that dream that you have? What is that business that you desperately want to launch? Or that ministry that you want to get focus for? It could be a church, it could be a nonprofit or a cause. Or maybe it's just a product. Maybe you work in a corporate world and you're trying to launch a product, or you're trying to launch a service and you need a platform. You realize that if you had a platform, it would make all kinds of things possible. And in fact, I want to leave you from this section with that question. What would a platform make possible for you? What would it make possible for your product, for your business, for your cause, for your message, for what it is you want to get out to the world? Well, to comment on this episode, you can go to my blog at michaelhyatt.com, scroll down past the show notes, and you'll see the comment section, and you can leave a comment there. Well, I have had so many questions from my listeners this week about Platform that I'm going to dedicate this episode and the next, I think, to the topic of Platform so that we can cover some of these questions, because I do think that it's going to enable me to answer some of the questions that you probably have about Platform. So let's start first with Pilar Arsenic. Pilar, take it away.
Hi, my name is Pilar Arsenic, and I'm calling from New York City. My website is inhisloveministries.blogspot.com. And my question is, when you were just starting out, how did you personally discover or find your voice? What did you do?
That is a great question. I get that question every time I speak on the topic of Platform. Every time I sit down with people who want to build a platform, that question inevitably comes up. How do you find your voice? Well, maybe we ought to define it. Your voice is sort of that authentic ability that you have to communicate. You know, it's your unique expression. It's the way you express yourself. It's could even be the subject matter that you talk about, but it's your unique expression. And I would say first of all, Pilar, to be conscious of that is great, because you do need to find your voice. But I would say that you don't really find it by trying to find it. You know, I would say the secret is to be less self-conscious or less conscious about how you're coming across, and much more conscious about your audience's needs. What drives them? What are they concerned about? What are the solutions they're looking for? I can think of times when I've gotten up to do public speaking, and when I've been so focused on myself, what will they think about me? And I've been so focused about what it is I'm trying to get across, and really, you know, making sure that I've got my outline solid and overly concerned about my content. Those are the times when I don't really communicate in an authentic voice. And I think people know it. There's just not a connection. But when I stand up and I'm focused on them, and I'm very present to their needs, to their concerns, to what they need out of this session, that's when I communicate the best. I don't know of a real shortcut for this other than just writing and writing and writing. Or if you're a podcaster, and I'm right in the thick of this myself, just doing it. I still don't feel like I found my voice on podcasting. I'm getting there, but it's a lot more incremental. I wish somebody could give me the magic bullet that would make it happen. But so far, that hasn't happened. I'm just going to have to keep doing this. And I'm on episode number 13 right now, but I think it's probably going to take me 50 or 100 episodes before I really find my voice, settle in, feel really comfortable doing this. There are moments, you know, when I feel like I found my voice, but there are a lot of moments when I feel like I'm really grinding. I'm really having to work at this. But that's okay. You know, that's just part of what you have to do to find your voice. So don't lose heart. Just get out there and be experimental. The next question comes from Tor Constantino. Tor?
Hey, Michael. This is Tor Constantino from Washington, D.C. I write a blog, thedailyretort.com. A quick question about your book, Platform. For someone who's just starting out, what do you think is the single most important thing to do when building a platform, or where should somebody start who's just in the process of building a platform? Thanks so much. Appreciate all you do. Bye.
Thanks, Tor. Tor has guest posted on my blog and has made a great contribution to my community. But I would say, Tor, that the first thing to do, and it's the first thing I talk about in the book, is start with a wow. You've got to get the product right. Now, warning, you can't get it so right and obsess about this so much that you procrastinate and never ship it. I know people all over the country. I meet these people all the time who have been trying to launch a blog, you know, for the last 2 years, but they can't quite get the design the way they want it, or they can't quite get that first article the way they want it. And so they just keep procrastinating. I'm not talking about that, but I am talking about getting crystal clear on the wow. And the way you do that, and I talk about this in the book, but wow is the difference between your audience's expectation and their experience. So in other words, if they have one expectation, but they experience something that's far greater than that, that's wow. Example from real life, you drive over a hill, you know, you just think it's going to be more of what you've already experienced, and suddenly you see the Grand Canyon. Wow. If you weren't expecting that, the difference between your expectation and the experience is a wow. Or you go to a movie that wasn't overhyped, that was just something you happened to stumble into, but it's a great movie. The difference between your expectation and your experience is wow. So you have to get very clear about the product or the service or the message. And I suggest in the book that you actually even write down, what are people expecting from me or expecting from my company or expecting from my church? And then over-deliver. Articulate what the experience will look like when it's wow. So that's where I would start. When you have a wow product, it makes everything much easier. Mary DeMuth had a similar question, and here it is. Mary?
Hi, this is Mary DeMuth. I blog at marydemuth.com. And my question is, after reading Platform, you give us about 78 to 1 bajillion ideas on how to build your platform. But if you were to sit down with someone and give them your top 3 things they should do to develop their platform that would be the most return on the on investment, what would those be? Thank you so much.
Mary, it's a great question. Mary also guest posts at my blog quite a bit and has a great blog herself. And that's at marydemuth.com. Mary, I wish I could give you a silver bullet. You know, unfortunately, I don't think there is one. In fact, I couldn't even narrow it down to 2 or 3. You know, there's a bunch of them in the book, a lot of practical step-by-step advice. And that's one of the things I tried to do in the book that was different from most of the business books that I read, is that I wanted it to be very practical. No pie in the sky, no armchair theory. This is all stuff that I've done in building my own platform. But honestly, I can't narrow it down to just one topic. And I think that kind of silver bullet thinking, I'm not accusing you of this, but I'm just saying that all of us are guilty of this from time to time, thinking that if we can just find that one thing, it will be a game changer. It will change everything. I think success looks a lot more like this, and that is just incrementally doing the right things day after day. You know, it's showing up on social media. It's writing, or it's recording your podcast. It's connecting with other bloggers and other people with platforms and being generous. You know, it's all of those things and more, but it's doing all those things over a long period of time that builds your platform. So again, I wouldn't look for a singular thing or even 2 or 3 things, but what are the consistent practices that you're going to implement, that I'm going to implement, that are going to build that platform over time? Next question comes from Dana Pittman. Dana?
Dana Pittman calling from Houston, Texas. My website is danapittman.com. My question for you, Michael, is how do you reinvent a platform if you've had a standing before, however you want to go in a new direction? Do you use the same steps and start all over again? I look forward to your feedback. Thank you.
Dana, that's a great question. And, you know, I've done it myself probably 3 or 4 times. When I started blogging out in 2004, when I started blogging, I call my blog Working Smart because I really wanted it to be about productivity. Well, then I kind of got bored with that. I still write about productivity, but I couldn't write all the time about productivity because my interests were broader than that. So then when I became the CEO of Thomas Nelson, I renamed it to From Where I Sit, because I was, you know, kind of in the corner office at this point, and I wanted to write on my perspectives in publishing. Well, I kind of got bored with that, and I realized that my interests were broader than that. So then I just decided to start calling it michaelhyatt.com. And by the way, that domain always pointed to this particular blog, whatever it was called at the time. But I'm just saying I did reinvent myself, and I probably not the last time I'll reinvent myself. I think this is a environment that's constantly changing, and you've got to be willing and open to doing that. I'm asking the question about once a year, you know, is there something I need to change? Do I need to get more narrow? Do I need to get more broad? But here's the key thing. You don't need to go through a whole new launch to do that. You may want to, you know, shut your blog down for a week or two and retool, but I wouldn't do it with a lot of fanfare. You know, I would just kind of, what in the software business they call slipstreaming, but just bring the new you kind of into line and let your readers praise you, and don't make a big announcement because you're going to be creating a lot of expectations. You know, like, oh my gosh, I'm creating this thing that's going to be awesome. It's going to blow you away. Wait till you see. Well, you've created an enormous expectation. And if it doesn't do that, you're going to create disappointment. I think it's much, much better to just slipstream it and just start doing it and test it. You know, again, the key to success in this new world, this brave new world of social media, is experimentation. Get out there and try it. If your readers like it, continue doing it. If they don't, then change something. Next question comes from Mark Shelsky.
Hi, Michael. This is Mark Shelsky. I blog at markallenshelsky.com about wholehearted living and emotionally healthy faith. And after reading Platform, I was wondering how you manage the balance between the time it takes to build your platform online and the time that you want to invest in writing your books or creating other content that you sell or deliver in your speaking. How do you manage that balance? Thanks.
Mark, I can think of three responses to that. Number one, you definitely have to do both. This is not an either or proposition. And realize that until the last year, I had a full-time job and I was doing both. So I was the CEO of Thomas Nelson Publishers, which was a pretty full-time job. And yet I found time in the evenings and early in the morning to do this. So you have to do both. It's not just content creation, but it's content creation and building a platform. Second, the building the platform time doesn't take as much time as you would expect. I probably spend, not counting blog posts, and I'll talk about that in a second, but just, you know, like the social media interactions and reaching out to other people takes me less than 30 minutes a day. And I've got a whole chapter in the book that talks about my strategy and more specifically the tools that I use to enable me to do that in 30 minutes a day. The third thing I would say is that my blog and my podcasting is a way for me to develop content. So this content will end up being repurposed in products that I'll sell, in products that will become standalone products, but it's kind of my laboratory. It's where I'm testing out ideas. I'm trying to see if they get an audience response. I'm checking them to see what I've overlooked, what I've missed, because my audience will tell me. So I don't see them as two separate activities. I think they can be one and the same. You can take the same content that you're going to sell and use it to build your platform. Next question comes from Dan Foster. Dan?
Hey, Mike. It's Dan Foster with Building Champions in Portland, Oregon. My website is coachdanfoster.com. My question for you today is on timing. I want to create smart goals around building my platform and would love to hear from you on how long you feel it should take for someone with a full-time job to get through your great step-by-step guide to building their own platform. Thanks, Mike.
Well, I think you can get through my book and do the rudimentary things probably in 30 to 90 days. Now, does that mean that you build it and everybody's going to show up? No, but I'm just saying to build it and get launched is probably a 30 to 60 day process. I think you've got to be patient here, though, because it's probably going to take a year or two before you have a platform that's significant enough that you can move the needle on the projects that you want to promote. Having said that, it does not take an immense audience to be successful. And I could point to some specific examples, and I won't because I don't want to embarrass these people, but they don't have huge followings. They've been tremendously successful. They're making a lot of money. They're seeing a lot of success for their causes, but it takes more, it's more about engagement. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It's more about engagement than it is about reach. It's more about having, you know, 1,000 true fans. I can't remember who talked about that. It might've been Seth Godin, but it's more about having 1,000 true fans that you can count on to get the word out when you need to, than it is about having, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who don't really have that much connection to your brand. So I would not, you know, it's kind of a biblical phrase, I would not despise the days of small beginnings. You know, to get a platform up and launched doesn't take that long. And obviously you're not answering this question because I know you personally, and I know that you've got yours up and launched. But I think that for most people, the sooner they get started, the sooner they can reap the rewards. Last question comes from Charles Stone.
Hey, Michael. This is Charles Stone from Aurora, Illinois. My website is www.charlesstone.com. Here's a question. Let's say someone really has a message they want to get out, but they're really struggling with self-confidence. What would you say to them to build confidence to go ahead and take the leap and get their message out and build a platform? Thanks.
Well, confidence is something that, frankly, I struggle with every day. In fact, Cliff Ravenscraft, the podcast AnswerMan.com, and I were talking about this the other day, and he said that in the last 50 episodes of his podcast, and I'm not sure I quite got the numbers right, but like 40 or 45 of them, he didn't feel that great about when he was recording them, and just kind of felt like, you know, he could have done a better job and didn't have that self-confidence. I feel the same way almost with every podcast, definitely with every podcast, with almost every blog. Even in the middle of writing this book, there were times when I just wanted to throw it in the trash and to give Thomas Nelson back the royalty advance that they had paid me and just say, look, I give up, because I didn't have that confidence. I think for anybody who's creating anything, this is a common dilemma. The only people that I've met that were super confident are people whose art wasn't that great. I remember I had a author one time, a well-known author, who got in a car with me, and he had this manuscript clutched to his chest, and he was late with it, but he was delivering it to me, and he said, you know, this is my best work. It's going to be phenomenal. It's going to be a New York Times bestseller. I'm going to be on Oprah with it, back when Oprah had a show. And, you know, you don't need to change a word. You can go straight to press with this. And I said, great. I mean, awesome. So I gave the manuscript to one of our managing editors who read it overnight, because we happened to be at a trade show when this was happening, and who came back to me the next morning shaking his head and said, this needs a lot of work. You know, this is nowhere close to what it needs to be to have a chance at succeeding in the marketplace. So that was a case where a guy was overly confident and didn't have any reason. So, you know, I personally think it's better to be humble and let your lack of self-confidence work for you. Now, having said that, I do think self-confidence happens over time. You know, I just learned to kind of, you know, not worry about it and just be productive in spite of how I may feel about it, because I've realized that there's no necessary correlation between how I feel about what I've written or what I've recorded and what the actual impact is going to be on the audience. That is so important. Things that I think are going to be a slam dunk and be very successful don't get any traffic. And things that I think, you know, are just kind of a throwaway and I'm kind of embarrassed to put it out there, you know, end up being the ones that the blog posts or the podcast episodes that really resonate with people. So I just wouldn't get too hung up on that about self-confidence. Again, the thing you need to be thinking about is your audience, not yourself or even your own psychology. So I hope that's helpful. That's about all the time we have for questions. But I do have a couple of announcements. Again, this is launch week. This week, if you're listening to this on May the 23rd through the 25th, is that's the last days that we have available for this special offer I want to tell you about. But the book has been endorsed by 27 people, and I'm so grateful, but including Seth Godin, Chris Brogan, Dave Ramsey, John Maxwell, Tim Sanders, and a whole bunch more. I won't read all 27 to you. So far, it's got over 70 reviews on Amazon, or at least at the time I'm recording this, all 5-star, which I'm enormously grateful for. And as soon as I record that or say it out loud, somebody's going to give a review that's not 5-star. But right now, they're all 5-star. So I am really, really, really excited about this book. And I really think it has a chance of getting on the bestseller list, but not without your help. And that's where I'm going to ask you to buy the book this week. And that's why I put together this special offer that includes 7 free bonuses worth $375.98. And I've been telling you about this for a couple of weeks. Well, the time is now. To get this special bonus offer, all you need to do is to go buy the book between now and the end of the day on May the 25th. And let me just tell you quickly the 7 bonuses. Bonus number 1 is a 6-part video series called the Platform Video Jumpstart Series. Bonus number 2, why now is the best time ever to be an author. It's a 45-minute speech that I gave at the Indie Author Conference last spring, and I think you'll find it enormously inspirational. And even if you have never thought about being an author, I think you should. I think nothing will credential you and help you build a platform faster than becoming a published author. Bonus number 3, how to write a winning book proposal. These are 2 audio recordings for my soon-to-be-released audio product called Everything You Need to Know to Get Published. So these are 2 of the sessions on how to write a winning book proposal. And again, if you don't plan on doing a book proposal or being an author, these sessions will just help you sell anything. Bonus number 4 and number 5 are my 2 ebooks, Writing a Winning Nonfiction Book Proposal and Writing a Winning Fiction book proposal. Those are two book proposals that are two ebooks that will enable you to get a proposal done quickly and think about it strategically. Bonus six, and man, I'm excited about this one. This is the digital editions of Platform. So if you buy the book, I'll give you the Kindle edition, the Nook edition, the iPad edition, and a PDF. So all the digital editions. And then finally, bonus number seven is the unabridged audio edition of Platform. I took 2 full days and recorded this in the studio, every single word. And if you've listened to me or if you've read my blog, you know that this is the primary way that I consume books today, the primary way that I read. And that's I listen to the audiobook, which enables me to do it when I'm running or I'm commuting in the car or whatever. But that's the seventh bonus. And you can find all the details at platformbook.com. And you don't want to miss this. After Friday, May the 25th, this offer goes away forever. You'll never see it again. You may be able to buy these products later, but they're going away forever. So if you want to take advantage of this, just go buy the book from any retailer and email me the receipt. And again, I explain the whole process in very simple fashion at platformbook.com. So that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. In the next episode, it's going to be Platform Part 2. I'm going to take a lot more questions. If you've got a question that you want to leave for me, leave it on the voicemail at michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. There'll be a link in the show notes, but michaelhyatt.com/podcast question. And again, visit Platform Book to take advantage of the 7 free bonuses. I would also be grateful if you would rate my podcast on iTunes. That helps tremendously with keeping my podcast visible so people who have never heard of it can discover it. And if you'd like to comment on this episode, please go to michaelhyatt.com, go to the show notes for this episode, scroll down to the comments section. I would love to hear from you, whether it's a comment, a question, or whatever. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your life. Are you?